taking a slow, steady breath. I'll come home every few months to babysit. And think of the time difference. If you need moral support in the middle of the night, someone to FaceTime during night feeds, I'm one call away. The tears fall thick and fast after that. I hold her hand, a warm sensation spreading through me. I am so, so glad I woke up back here. And even if I can't be sure I've fixed all my mistakes, if I have no guarantees my life will work out, I'm so happy I get to see Sasha arrive where she always wanted to be. We all agree a celebration is needed. A bon voyage slash early baby shower, Ali screeches. Babies and boats, planes and pacifiers. On the last day of November, the type of miserable, blustery evening when no one wants to leave the house, the people I love the most in this world gather in a little bar in the centre of Winchester. The laid-back living room vibe has been overpowered with pretty strings of fairy lights and, as Ali had planned, a whole host of contradictory party pieces. We have foil balloons of cute baby heads bumping violently under the heater into ones that look like Titanic, and a cake of a baby straddling a jumbo jet like a unicorn. "You're finally here," Ali says, bouncing to the loud music as Henry and I walk in. She's more erratic than normal, with her updo already cascading down her neck, her eyeshadow smudged. She's either struggling under the stress of throwing this party, or Marcus has ramped up his campaign to be named worst person in the world. I can't see him among the crowd. "Do you like it?" she says. "Please tell me you like it." Henry lifts a makeshift banner that reads, "Baby, goodbye."
"It's a little morbid," he says.
"It's not morbid, it's kooky," she insists. "Say goodbye, wave hello, and all that." I tell Ali how grateful I am. It's such a wonderful turnout. A few of my old colleagues from Le Bleu have shown up to congratulate me. Jean-Paris apparently sends his best wishes. I tell them he can keep them. I spend over an hour mingling with Sasha and Roman's lovely families, gushing over how sensational Sasha looks in her skin-tight baby blue dress. Midway through the evening, she makes a little speech, thanking everyone for coming. Then she turns her attention to me. "And to my best friend Grace," she says. "Those of you that don't know, I lived with Grace before I met this wonderful man here." She runs a hand down Roman's arm. "She is one of the most supportive and caring people I've ever known. She has landed a job in New York. Of course, it was only a matter of time before the world saw what we did years ago. Please congratulate her and buy her a farewell drink." Sasha hands me the microphone, which completely catches me off guard. I look around for Henry, realizing he must have slipped away somewhere while I was in the toilet. I can't see Ali or Marcus either, but I thank Ali anyway for hosting, and everyone for coming. When the door to the bar swings open and Dotty walks in hand with Althea, looking so strong, so healthy, it takes my breath away. She was diagnosed with heart disease, again, a few months ago. But this time, it's an early diagnosis, and we have time on our side. She's responding well to treatment. She's exercising daily. Salsa, long walks, swimming. She eats well. Has stopped drinking. But the biggest change is having Althea by her side again. I don't know how I didn't see it before. The love they share. That's always been there. Only now, unhidden, shared with the world. Proudly. I take her in my arms and squeeze. "What did I miss?" she says, bemused. I pull back and laugh. "I'm so happy to see you." She turns to Althea. "We should turn up late to everything if this is the greeting we get." I escort them to a reserved table in the corner. I take their coats. I get them a drink each. Elderflower cordial.
"So, where is this handsome partner of yours I've heard so much about?"
Dotty asks, removing her scarf. I keep forgetting she hasn't yet met him in this timeline. Nerves tingle. She liked him the first time round. She'll like him now. "He's here somewhere." I scan behind me. There are too many heads, too much noise. "Stay here, I'll be right back." I search the dance floor and around the buffet table to no avail. I ask Sasha if she's seen Henry, and she says she thinks he went out back to get more napkins.
I follow a short corridor behind the bar, leading to an office space. In the middle of the room are Henry and Ally, hugging. Her arms are around his shoulders, her face tucked into the space under his chin. She's crying. There's something about the way Henry's hands rub her back, the way his face rests against her hair, that makes me hang back. Henry looks helpless when he spots me, ushering me over with a brief jerk of his head. Grace is here, he tells Ally. Her body shakes as she silently weeps. Do you want to talk to her about it? I'm sure she'll be more help than I am. She pulls away and wipes her wet cheek with the back of her hand. I'm kind of sick of talking about it already. She slides past me, heading for the ladies' toilets. I put my hand on her shoulder. What's happened? Henry can fill you in, she says, then fakes a smile. I don't want to ruin your big night. Ally, you're not. It's nothing, she says. I'll be fine. Right now, she looks anything but, with jet black smudges on her face and bloodshot eyes. It's the worst I've ever seen her. She disappears out the door. Ally and Marcus broke up, Henry says, filling his arms with me instead. As I rest my cheek on his damp, tear-stained shirt, I register how he doesn't sound surprised. As though he saw it coming as well as I did. It doesn't take travelling back in time to see that their relationship was built on quicksand. But still, the familiarity startles me. My nerves grow thorns. He cheated on her, I say. What? No, Henry sighs. She ended it. She finally had enough. That wasn't how it played out before. I have a vivid memory of Sasha telling me that Ally had come home to their flat and caught him in bed with someone else. I remember because of how sick it made me feel. The same sickness that's washing through me right now. I feel like I'm scrambling for purchase on a life that doesn't exist anymore. I've said she can move back in with me while she looks for a place. It might mean she moves into the new house with me for a while. That's okay, isn't it? Of course. It's your decision, I say. You don't need to ask me. I know I don't, Henry says. But I want to. I turn to grab some napkins, thinking of Ally and her heartbreak, of all she's been through and what she needs. Of all the people to make sure someone has a place to stay, it's going to be Henry. But I'm feeling it again, stirring in my stomach. The jealousy. The thought of the two of them having quiet nights in, spending their weekends having long lunches, sharing everything I'm missing. I know I need to get over this, to let it go, to trust him. But it's hard when I'll be thousands of miles away, alone. And he'll be. I nod. She should absolutely move in. It makes the most sense. Henry smiles, coming up behind me to rest his chin on my shoulder as he gives me one last luxurious squeeze. As much as I'd like to keep you back here and make the most of our time alone, there are people out there who need you almost as much as I do, he says. The words are full, but they make me feel hollowed out. He plants a slow kiss on my neck. A tear falls. I use the heel of my palm to wipe it into my hair. A well-disguised hair flip. I'll be right out, just grabbing some supplies. I watch him walk along the corridor, into the busy bar. I'd managed to hold it all in, for all this time, months, pretending it never happened, pretending I don't see what's right in front of me. I'd squashed it so low, I thought it would be buried forever. But the second I see him disappear, it resurfaces, rising from the depths of me. All my worry, my jealousy, my biggest fears. I let it all out, followed by the contents of my stomach into a waste paper bin. It's our last night before I leave for New York. The last time I'll see Henry until Boxing Day, when he plans to fly out to visit me. My entire house is packed. Everything from the sponges under the sink to a million and one hidden hair grips, ready for either shipping or storage. I can hear Henry's electric toothbrush from my bedroom. Beside me is his own overnight bag. The drawer that used to be his contains only dust. It occurs to me that this is what our relationship will consist of now. For a few years at least. Jet-lagged nights and packing and leaving and sad back-of-the-taxi tears. Sex through a phone screen and I miss you texts. Which reminds me. Have you seen my phone charger? I call. Did you move it? It was supposed to be in with my hand luggage. I'm panicking over nothing, letting the anxiety win. Henry appears at the doorway, his toothbrush between his lips.
You can buy one at the airport, he says.
I can't just replace everything, I snap. Henry nods, as though he knows I'm not talking about the charger. Not really. He finishes brushing his teeth, then returns to the bedroom. It takes him 2 seconds of searching to find it, in my hand luggage, where it was supposed to be.
Oh,
I say. You're welcome, he smiles. I can't. He puts my phone on charge, placing it on the bedside table. Then he sits on the corner of my bed, watching me. Sorry, I say. Thank you. Henry tugs the waistband of my pajama bottoms until I'm standing between his open legs. His palms engulf my hip bones. He presses a kiss against my stomach, which used to drive me wild. Only now, the only sound it elicits is a frightened sigh. Henry looks up at me. I know this is a huge step, but everything is going to be fine, he tells me. We'll be fine. I want so badly to believe him that I let him kiss me again. The space beneath my belly button, then down. I twist my hands in his hair, gasping his name. Then I pull him to the bed and set the slowest pace in the world. Fingers squeezing, eyes locked. He tells me over and over how much I mean to him, how much he'll miss me, how nothing will ever come between us. We collapse into each other, heads on the pillow, misted with sweat. I cradle into his chest, the thrum of his heartbeat under me. I hold him tighter, gripping my arms around him, trembling as I say what I've always wanted to. I love you, Henry. I kiss his skin. I love you so, so much. It's the first time I've ever told him, and I'm so relieved to finally let it out that my shoulders collapse, my limbs feel light as air. As long as we love each other, that we're both in this for the long haul, we can survive the distance. I am glowing with love, hoping and praying I'm about to hear it in return. But Henry just sighs, giving me one brief kiss on the forehead before turning over to sleep. The only thing on his lips is silence. I'm spiraling. It's 8 hours until I need to leave for my flight. He didn't say it back. He said nothing at all. The light from the hallway makes shadow puppet nightmares on the bare wall. The things I promised to forget haunt me. If this glitch has taught me anything, it's that I'm not defined by the mistakes I've made, by my worst moments, by the things I wish with my whole heart that I could erase. And I know I should give Henry the same grace. But every time I close my eyes, I see fingertips digging into flesh. I hear sighs and whispers, a name in his mouth that's not mine. I have tried so hard to forget. I have tried to convince myself that this Henry is different, that he cares for me, that he supports me unequivocally, that he would never do anything to hurt me. But he doesn't love me. Henry must feel me crying because he wakes, wrapping his arms around me, begging me to tell him what's wrong. I want to tell him that I'm overreacting, that nothing's wrong. That he should go back to sleep, pretend everything is fine until it is. But isn't that what got me into this mess in the first place? Keeping my problems like a silent oath. I can't live like this anymore. It's all too much, I heave out. I'm so confused. He runs a hand down my hair. Is this about the move? I nod against him. I'm worried that the novelty will wear off. That we'll get bored of video calls and 6-hour gaps between texts. That you'll get frustrated and I'll be tired, and there will be a catastrophic communication breakdown, and then we'll start arguing, and the silence will stretch on, and then you'll destroy me all over again. He cocks a wry smile. Haven't we discussed the doomsday thinking already?
I know, I say, catching my pooling tears with my index fingers. But,
no buts, he says. We care about each other. That's all that matters.
He doesn't say love. Never says love. Long distance seems easy now, until the reality of it sets in. If you change your mind,
I'm not going to.
But if you do,
Henry is stern.
I won't.
You can't be certain, I yell in frustration. Absence is so hard. You might meet someone else.
Someone else, he gasps.
Did you really say that to me?
I'm being realistic. We'll be on the other side of the world. You might get lonely or bored. I might not be able to talk for days at a time. You might grow closer to someone else in a way you never expected. If that happens, if you think you want out of this.
Henry's face hardens so much I stop talking. A look of anger I've never seen on him before.
I have tried so hard, Grace. I know how tough you found it to open up, to let me in. I understand why. But at some point you have to help me out too.
He steps out of the bed, pacing before becoming still, naked in front of me, literally and figuratively.
You still don't trust me, do you?
I've tried to, but maybe too much has happened. Maybe I'll never trust anyone.
Not anyone.
His hands shake, his voice tremors.
You know I'm not going to hurt you.
But I don't, I say. I can never know that. And I realize this is my issue. Why I can't let it go. Because I don't know for sure. I will always wonder if I am one screw up away from him hurting me like I never believed possible. I've tried to run from the ghosts of us. If I don't believe in them, they can't hurt us. But they're always here, waiting in the shadows. And until I face them, we're going to keep coming back here. Over and over. Until I know for sure. I think it's best if we hit pause. For a while at least. I'll find my feet in New York, and then in a few months we can connect again. See where things lie. Months? Our eyes meet with raging intensity. I feel like I've pressed a big red button for detonation. The countdown timer ticking down. 3, 2, 1.
Please think about what you're saying, Grace. Some things can't be undone.
Which is exactly the problem. My eyes fill with tears. He's holding it together. Just. He walks into the hallway, puts his hands on the empty side table, head down as he breathes in and out. Then he storms back in.
No, he says. I need you. I want you. I can't walk away from this.
All I want to do is walk away from this. This bad memory. I want to forgive him, but I don't know how to separate the man standing before me and the man I knew all those years ago. I'm silent. Tears drop to the floor. I have to know. I have to know. I have to know. The words swarm my brain like an infestation.
So that's it, he asks. I can't speak. Grace?
I'm shaking.
Is this over?
I finally find the courage to look at him and say the exact words that broke us before, tempting the cruelest of fates.
I don't know, I say.
Drenched in anger, he steps into grey gym shorts, then pulls on a crumpled black t-shirt. Without word or protest, he heads downstairs. I hear a drawer open and close, a light switch. I jump with the slam of the door. I truly don't know if this is the end of us, but I'm about to find out.
Chapter 25. Henry. 5 years earlier. She took my money, my compensation, my hard-earned savings. I was gone. That was all I could think as I left her house. I was gone midnight, pitch black and raining. I must have looked like a madman, storming and shaking my way towards Winchester city centre. I thought tonight was going to be a romantic evening that would celebrate the restaurant, my new house. And now all of it was hanging on by a single thread. For all I knew, the last fucking cord had been severed. When the rain hardened, I stopped for shelter in the doorway of a bar. There was a Christmas party inside, noisy, far too merry. Someone was singing a love song on the karaoke. I put my head back against the wooden frame, fighting the urge to dissolve into tears. The last time I'd cried had been in a doorway too, 8 years earlier. Yet the roaring feeling in my chest felt far too similar. Like being abandoned. Let down. Like no one in the whole world gives a shit about you.
Mate, a burly voice came from behind me. No loitering, in or out.
It was a bouncer, the biggest guy I'd ever seen. I wasn't about to argue with him. I looked at the rain hitting the tarmac thick and fast. My mood in weather form, but then I looked inside the bar, at the liquor above the bar, glowing gold. In, I said, flashing my ID. It was an easy decision. The bar was rammed and I fought my way to the front, being nudged and kicked as people tried to dance next to me. Grace's lies played on a loop in my mind. Her tears. That dickhead smirking footballer. All of it made my hands vibrate with anger. I needed to find my off switch. To be numb. A pretty barmaid asked me what I wanted. Whiskey neat. I slammed it back, then ordered another. Rough night? She asked. Yep. She nodded with sympathy, then gestured to two large blokes screeching Adele. You and me both. I didn't laugh, didn't smile. I stared at her, and whatever she saw in my eyes caused her to look at me like a lonely dog in the street. So she handed me a metaphorical bone. Another drink. My breath felt like fire, burning me up. My heart was still pounding, but the sharpness was easing. The piercing pain of Grace's words and actions hurt a fraction less. Another? The barmaid asked once I'd sunk the third shot. I wanted another. I wanted to drink until I was unconscious. It had worked before, when I'd been struggling and hurting. Until morning came, anyway. I put down a tip and walked out of the bar. Ali was still up when I made it home, soaked to the bone with a thunderous expression. She sat up on the sofa when she spotted me, pausing her film. What the hell happened to you? I couldn't deal with her seeing me like this. I stood dripping in the hallway for a second. I knew I was going to have to explain this, to tell her what Grace had done. The thought alone made me want to be violently ill, as though saying it aloud made it even more real than it already was. I needed another drink. I grabbed a bottle of warm beer from the back of the cupboard. Must have been left over from the house party. Tasted like piss, but who cares? Ali leaned against the doorframe, and it dawned on me that she shouldn't have been here. She'd moved out weeks before. What are you doing here? The accusation hit harder than I intended. Marcus, we... It's over. I could tell she wanted to cry, but she held herself together, concerned for me at the forefront. I dreaded to think how bad I must look for her not to launch into the sorrowful story that was fighting its way out of her. I hope you wouldn't mind me staying here, Ali said. I did text you, but I figured you were at Grace's and at myself. She paused when she noticed how fast I was drinking. I hadn't looked at my phone in hours. Henry, what on earth? You and Marcus aren't the only ones who broke up, I said. What? She gasped. Are you serious? Technically, I wasn't. I didn't know if we were over or not. But it sure as hell seemed fatal. The way I felt that night, I thought there was no coming back. How could I look at Grace the same way? How could I support a business that had robbed me of my home? My compensation? A decade of savings? Gone on fucking forks and French fries? I thought you were happy, Ali was saying. I thought this was the real deal. So did I. I walked past her to the living room. I hit unpause on her film. A couple began kissing. I hit pause again. Ali watched me from the doorway, dumbfounded and a little concerned. You're shivering. I think you should get changed. I didn't move. She disappeared into the kitchen, then returned seconds later with a knife. She stabbed it into one of the gaffer-taped boxes, reaching inside until she pulled out a checked blanket. She draped it over me. I kept my eyes fixed on the screen, in a trance. Talk to me, Henry, Ali pleaded. I turned to look at her, still not ready to put it into words. She had bloodshot eyes, puffy cheeks. What happened with Marcus? I'm not saying anything until you tell me what happened with Grace. I asked first. With respect, I'm not the one shaking as I down beer, she said. Spill. I peeled at the label of my bottle. Ali watched in silence. Then I told her everything. It fell out of me like I was talking about someone else. The plot of a crappy movie. Lars. The restaurant's finances. How I was about to be homeless. Again. The one thing I swore I would never be. When I finished, Ali took a long, deep breath. Shit, she said. Yeah, shit, I replied. We'll figure this out. You can call the landlord, tell him you're not moving, or you can find somewhere else to rent. You don't need to panic. You sure about that? My voice was so flat, so emotionless. I took another swig. Do you? Ali said before stopping herself. Do I what? Do you think she was using you all this time? For your money? No, she wouldn't. I dismissed it instantly. Now, Grace would never do that. But then the doubt crept in. The Grace I thought I knew would never do any of this. She'd have kept her promises, or even better, and never made them in the first place. Oh, God. Now the cogs were turning, the thoughts screaming in my drunken mind. She used me. She never cared about me at all. If she did, she wouldn't be able to treat me like this. My heart felt like it was being compressed by a vice. I couldn't think about this anymore. I was driving myself insane. I took another gulp. Where was that bloody off switch? Tell me what happened with Marcus. Ali cried as she recalled how they'd had a big fight the previous day, that she had long suspected Marcus of speaking to other women, which was proved correct when she came home from work early today to find him in their bed with someone he'd met online. Marcus didn't even have the decency to act appalled at what he'd done. He simply shrugged and said they weren't boyfriend and girlfriend, that if she was going to cause this much fuss, they never would be. She got cheated on, then she got dumped. Everyone leaves me, Henry. Tears fell in quick succession. Her shoulders bounced and she sobbed. Everyone. As horrendous as this situation was, I knew it was about more than Marcus. I knew she was hurting in the same way I was, at being betrayed by someone you'd come to trust, to love. And in the end, it all wound up in disappointment. As it always did for Ali and me. Vivian chose to leave a 9-year-old girl to fend for herself for 3 weeks, until social services intervened and shipped her off to the other side of the county. New school, old clothes. She didn't stand a hope in hell of settling in, which was just as well because she was moved again 3 months later. New school, old clothes. The cruelest déjà vu. My parents chose to watch their 3 boys waste away before them. They berated us for existing, for getting in the way of their fun, for the lies they told. That was the last time. They were clean. Nothing bad was going to happen to us. A lie is a lie, and I'd heard them all. So I knew better than to tell Ali lies now. Instead, I gave her a beer, grabbed another for myself. We made light work of both. Then Ali pulled out a half-empty bottle of rum, popped the cork and took a swig. She grimaced, then handed it to me. We need a brown paper bag and a bridge. Really take that homeless theme to the next level, I said. She laughed, a tipsy cackle. I don't think living down south has made any improvement on my life whatsoever. The only person I liked at work, Sasha, left to start her own firm. I got my heart broken. I only have one friend down here and he's too busy to spend a minute of time with me. She nudged my knee. I might move back up north. What, you don't want to live on the street with me? Oh, go on then, she joked. I've done it before, I can do it again. The fact she wasn't joking anymore just made me feel sad. So very sad. Marcus is a twat, I said, the words starting to slur together. There was no way he was good enough for you, Ali. And I know it feels hopeless. I know it feels like you've opened your heart to someone and they've put an axe in it. But I promise you're going to meet someone who understands you, who adores you, who tells the whole world you're his girlfriend, who would change his entire life to make you happy. Not some moron in a fake leather jacket who only showers twice a week, if you're lucky. She didn't quite laugh, but a small smile crept in. I was glad I was making her feel a bit better, because I still felt like every breath was about to be my last. Ali turned to look at me in such a powerful way that it caused me to hold very still. What? She took a long swig from the bottle and stared at me, eyes still filled with tears. I'm so glad I have you, she said. I realised Ali was the only person I knew who hadn't ever let me down. I'm glad I have you too. And then I was crying. Full, body-shaking tears. Everything caught up to me in that split-second moment. The pain and the hurt. The heartbreak on Grace's face when I left. The fire in my chest at how this woman I was so certain was the one for me had ruined me. Ali had her arms around my shoulders, holding me in place while I let it all out. It was working. The release. The crying slowed and the burn of heartbreak was slowly replaced by something else. Embarrassment. I wiped my face with the backs of my hands. I'm sorry, Al. I'm a mess. Stop that right now. She put her palms on my wet cheeks until I was looking her in the eye. Don't apologize for feeling, Henry. She hurt you. You have every right to be upset, to have a crazy amount of emotion flowing through you. And if you can't cry in front of your best friend, who can you cry in front of? She wiped a tear from her own cheek. The state of us, I said with a wry laugh. Ali paused. That look was back. The one she'd given me earlier, intense and complicated. If I didn't know better, I'd swear my blood stopped pumping for a second. She parted her lips. Then she leaned closer, arching, placing the smallest of kisses against my mouth. I shook my head, pulling away, but with her hands still on my cheeks, I didn't get far. "What are you doing?" I whispered. Her eyes flicked back and forth between mine. Confusion gave way to pleading. "I don't want to feel sad anymore. I want to feel anything else." She kissed me again, her warm, soft body molding against mine. I could taste her tears. Or maybe they were mine. I put my hand on her ribs to give myself some space, to hit pause so my mind could catch up. But as soon as I did, she whispered, "Please, Henry," pushing me until I was flat on the sofa. She lowered her mouth to my neck, fingers tugging at my soaked t-shirt. The ceiling was moving, the walls closing in. Ali moved her attention back to my face, pausing, lips hovering over mine, eyes big, brown, and wet. I tried for so long to be perfect, and look where it had got me. Screwed over and lied to. I let every suppressed, silenced demon in my head win. "I give up. Do your worst." It was the most catastrophic decision I'd ever made, an impulse I would regret 4 years. And I knew it in that moment. But my whole world felt like it was spinning on the wrong axis, and I needed to shut down, to disassociate, to disconnect my brain from my body, to feel anything but sadness. I kissed her back. It was the roughest kiss of my life, enough liquor to fuel my angriest fire. I squeezed my eyes closed and felt grace. I threaded my fingers into her hair. I tasted her mouth. I was hating and hurting and out of my mind. I wanted to escape, and I did, in Ali's lips. I let her pull off my t-shirt and toss it aside. I slid my hands under a silky pyjama top, so sloppy it took 3 attempts to get it over her head. The strap caught in her long hair and she laughed, stopping to detangle it, staring me dead in the eye. I could barely focus. I grabbed her hips and pressed her against me, too drunk to even be hard. "Henry," Ali gasped, disbelief and excitement rolled into one. She leaned forward, kissing my mouth like she'd found a lighthouse in the dark, like I was going to take all her heartache away. "Ali," I moaned back. "Ali. Ali. Ali." All it took was that one little word to wake me up. This was bad. My best friend, lines, boundaries, grace. I roused from the nightmare, wide-eyed as I came back to life. What the fuck is happening? What the fuck am I doing? Ali kissed her way south, frenzied hands tucking my jeans and boxers down my thighs. She took my limp dick in her hands and I felt alcohol in the back of my throat. Burning hot. "Stop, stop, stop," I told her gently, grabbing her wrists, trying to see straight to grasp some rationality. "Yes, please do." The voice behind us was meek, pin drop quiet. Grace was standing there, the front door wide open behind her. One hand held my spare key. The other was clutching the heart I just shattered.
Chapter 26, Grace, Now. I'm crying on my bedroom floor, my phone in my hands. I want to call Henry and explain why I'm out of my mind, why I'm hurting so bad. To tell him I got lost in a memory, a bad dream, a premonition, the truth, even. I want him to understand that when I look at him,
All I can see is Ali on top of him, his hand sliding over bare skin. All I can hear is the way she moaned his name. The way I did. The way only I should. But every time I bring up his name on my screen, I see something else. The argument that ensued. How they scrambled off each other. Henry so drunk he could hardly stand, pleading that it wasn't how it looked. That it didn't mean anything. Ali jumping to his defense, blaming herself, while she pulled her top back over her head. How long? I said. I didn't recognize my voice. How long has this been? This is it. They spoke in unison, which only made it worse. I steadied myself against a stack of cardboard boxes while Henry struggled to pull his boxes up. Nothing is happening. It's a moment of madness. Henry was in tears. So was I. So was Ali, now that I think about it. Something I never let myself do. The cliches came out. The apologies. The word mistake was thrown around like confetti. But I couldn't hear it. I didn't want to. I knew what it felt like to be cheated on. How cruel and callous and dirty it was. But this was something else. My heart freezing to a block. Shattered by the sledgehammer sight before me. Every infidelity before now congealed into one. The times I'd been played for a fool, been messed around, they all warped into Henry. The one person I loved more than anything. The one person I thought would never, ever hurt me. But I'd hurt him too, hadn't I? Was this my comeuppance? Did I deserve this? I've spent the last 5 years believing I did. I wished them good luck, in the most sardonic way I could. Then left. But I didn't walk away from him that night and move on. I had to do it every single day, in 100 different ways. When I took his key off my chain. When a nature documentary would come on and I'd force myself to change the channel. When I threw out his aftershave that had been sitting in my bathroom cupboard. The one I'd pressed against my nose in the depths of my despair. 100 small moments that all added up to make it look like I was over him. That I was fine. I was anything but. And here I am, about to do it all again. I thought if I learned from my mistakes, if I trusted as hard as I loved, stayed silent in my jealousy, that I might be able to save us. I ignored their stolen glances across the dinner table. Henry's disdain for Marcus. A jealousy he doesn't yet understand. The way Ali has every part of him. The pieces of himself he never dared to share with me. But there comes a point where you need to accept the cold, hard truth. You can't make someone love you. And you can't make them love only you. It's why, after all this time, he's never said it. Not before. Not tonight. I love you, Grace. He's never expressed those feelings. Because he can't. Eventually, I pick myself up off the floor. Knees burning. Eyes blurry. I open the front door in the hope he's still out there. That he never left. That he'll somehow read my mind. And find the only way to convince me that it's me he wants to be with. That it's me he loves. He's gone. Nothing has changed. I head back upstairs, distraught and confused. I grab my phone again. A single message. From Ali. Can you believe I'm sat here watching the holiday, crying because I'm going to miss you so much? Ugh, what a mess I've become. You better still keep in touch. You can't get rid of me that easily, Grace. We're friends for life now. Insert evil laugh here. But seriously, have a safe flight and text me when you land. Her message hits me like a glimmer of hope. Because one thing has changed. I wrap a coat over my pajamas and walk straight there, past the Christmas market, glowing in shades of red and gold as it winds down for the night, off the high street with its lingering evening shoppers. Onto the quiet road I spent the last 5 years pretending didn't exist. Ali answers the door. She's got her long hair tied up in a messy bun, her bag of crisps under her arm.
Grace, she says. What's wrong? Why are you...
Are you in love with him? I say. She jerks her head back, confused.
Who? Marcus?
Henry, I say. Are you in love with him? Ali looks behind her. I feel the warmth of the house on my face.
He's not here. She faces me again, forehead crumpled. Are you... Is this a joke?
The tears in my eyes tell her how serious I am. I know I sound insane, like a jealous girlfriend on speed, but I have this gut feeling, and I can't shake it, that I'm going to lose him to you. I look at Ali, but she's staring at the floor. And we're friends, aren't we? You can tell me the truth.
She sighs, then opens the door wider.
I think you better come inside.
Chapter 27. Henry, 5 years earlier. The last words Grace ever said to me were good luck. She walked out of my house, out of my life, and never spoke to me again. Ever. Not when I called, wrote, not when I stood outside her restaurant in the pouring rain, waiting for her to come out. Instead, I was met with Patrick, who put a firm hand on my shoulder and told me in no uncertain terms to clear off and never come back, or would call the police. She cut me out of her life like a bad habit, and the worst part was that I didn't even blame her for it. The anger I felt at her taking my savings hardened me, but I didn't even have that to hold on to, because just days later, money began showing up in my account. Dribs and drabs to begin with. 100, 50, 1,000. Then eventually, a regular £500 on the last day of the month. Like clockwork. 27 payments later, and as promised, she'd paid back every penny in full. I didn't take any joy in it. I had my money, but I would never have her. I tried to reach out again once the debt was settled. I knocked on her front door to no answer. I visited Dottie's bungalow to find it a building site, a new family making their mark. I tried calling too, but she'd either blocked me or changed her number because the line went dead every time. I didn't even get the sweet torture of hearing her voice telling me to leave a message. The only thing we shared was silence. Grace never forgave me. And worse still, I never forgave myself. 4 years later, I sat at the nurse's station. The heater beside me blowing across my face, the hospital windows all fogged up like snowy Christmas decor. But now, on the second day of January, it felt depressing. I logged onto the computer to check my emails. I'd spent the morning dealing with a post-op patient with complications. It was the first time I'd stopped moving since I clocked on 6 hours earlier. I made the most of it by doubling it up as my lunch break, at 4 in the afternoon. Some things never change. No time for a break, mate, Mikkel said, tapping the desk. Lunch on the run. I held up a crappy sandwich filled with chunks of poorly cut cheddar. I keep seeing cooking videos on social media of people making prepped meals for the week. They made it look so easy. I knew I should try it. Start looking after myself, caring what I put in my body, but I couldn't be arsed. It wasn't like I had anyone to look good for. The closest I'd come to a relationship since Grace was a few short-lived flings.
A feast! Mikkel laughed, then turned serious.
He leaned over the desk.
Speaking of, Ali asked me to invite you over for dinner this weekend.
I said, not lifting my eyes from the computer. It wasn't the first time he'd invited me to their house. Also wasn't the first time I'd blown him off. I'm tied up with some things. Thanks for the invite, though. Mikkel sighed. He knew the deal.
knew how gently he needed to tread. I think she misses you. I missed her too. But I'd long accepted things were never going to be the same. Can't help being busy, I replied. You know it's me that suffers, right? Why did he say no? Tell him we can order his favourite takeaway. Tell him David Attenborough is coming. Dude, I'm dying here.
It wasn't as if Ali and I hadn't tried this before, to carry on as normal. We went out once to a fancy bar in Winchester, not long after it all happened. A DJ in the corner, window shaking volume. Ali and I sat opposite each other, her fiddling with the straw, me twisting a bottle of beer like a fidget spinner. Drinking had once again become a familiar coping mechanism. Neither of us knew what to say. The night after, she'd gone to stay in the spare room of someone she knew at her firm. I lucked out. My landlord hadn't yet found a new tenant, so I extended my lease. Got in a cheery guy called Brian and his pet snake to take the spare room. Anything was better than the silence of being alone. I never did end up buying. I told people I was still looking, waiting for the right place to come available, and over time that became the truth. But at first, it was all about Grace. I had this delusion of her knocking on my front door one day, coming back to me, but someone else answering because I'd moved on. Heartbreak put my whole life on pause. Ali and I were making uncomfortable small talk about the snake and the frozen rodents filling my freezer when Mikkel walked into the bar. I'd never been so grateful to see him, which was saying something, because once he caught a patient's vomit in his bare hands, saving me from a drenching. Ali remembered him from their meeting in the summer and was clearly more comfortable talking to him, and I was bringing the mood down. So I made my excuses, heading home and leaving them to it. They started dating, which I heard about from him, not her. Engaged within the year, married the next. I went to the wedding. I smiled for the photographs. I wrote them a heartfelt card about how happy I was for them. I meant every word. But our friendship was never the same. It couldn't be. Because when I looked at Ali, I no longer saw my best friend. I saw the biggest mistake of my life. The doors to the ward burst open, a bed wheeled by a porter. The myocardial infarction patient from A&E I'd been waiting on. Saved by the bell. Another time, I said again to Mikkel as I made my escape. I'll hold you to that, he called back to me. I disappeared inside room 4, standing back as the porter positioned the bed, checking the chart. I scanned it top to bottom. Admitted 3 days ago. Prescribed thrombolytics. Angioplasty 8 hours ago. Lassa Evelps stable. Then my eyes snagged. I looked at the patient. Then back at the name. The woman was tiny. Almost 80. The oxygen mask covered most of her face, but there was no disputing who was in front of me. Dottie Monroe. The porter raised her up until she was looking me straight in the eye. Miss Monroe? I composed myself. I'm one of the nurses on the coronary care unit. I'll be making sure you get settled, get your pain meds, all that good stuff. My name is... She lowered her mask. Nurse Henry, she said, smiling. It has been quite a while. Her voice was meek. Her hands moved slow. Deep purple veins protruded from her papery skin. I wasn't sure you'd recognize me, I said. Those green eyes. I'd know them anywhere, darling. Dottie looked me up and down. Hate the beard, though. I smiled. Would you like me to get someone else? I can ask. Nonsense, she hissed. You'll do fine. I kept my focus on the blood pressure machine, wheeling it to her bedside. I explained what I was doing, that I'd be taking her temperature and oxygen levels shortly, too. I wrapped the cuff around Dottie's arm. She kept her eyes on me the whole time. I pretended not to notice.
I tell you that you were right. But I'm sure you know that now, she said, once the blood pressure machine began whirring.
About? My heart. I knew it was broken, but I didn't know it was also kaput medically. I glanced at her, then back to the reading. I'm sorry, I said.
Don't be. I only wish I had listened. Might have bought me a bit more time.
I began with the usual ward admission questions, checking Dottie's comfort level, how she was feeling. She told me she'd been fine, perusing the supermarket aisle for bread when a lingering stomach pain became piercing.
I didn't know it was a heart attack, she said. I thought I was having a hot flush. Maybe a spot of food poisoning. Until I passed out anyway. Then I didn't know what to think.
I pictured Dottie telling everyone not to make a fuss, saying she was fine and pushing through despite having a heart attack. I thought of Grace, like grandmother, like granddaughter. Heart attacks can present slightly differently in women, I said. It's not always the soap opera dramatics you see on screen. It can be subtle. I lifted her arm again, releasing the cuff of the blood pressure monitor. Marked the reading on her chart. Her name sat on the edge of my tongue, the same place it had been for 4 years. Was Grace with you? Dottie smiled at this, as if she'd been waiting for me to bring her up.
No.
And if she knew I was here, she would worry endlessly. I'll tell her once you lovely people have made me all better. I shook my head. That feels like, I began, like something a patient requests that the hospital have to abide by, she finished. I frowned, but it was her decision. I had processes I needed to follow. I reminded myself that this wasn't any of my business, but every shred of my soul screamed at me to ask, how is she? Dottie sighed. Grace likes to pretend that everything is fine, that she's coping on her own. But she's not. We both fell quiet. I know better than most how true that was, but still. When it was early morning and I couldn't sleep, my mind busy, I'd often imagine Grace as a